You're listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG. Thanks for joining us online, our live stream at kpcg.fm, and a link at thetrumpet.com as well. You can also listen on the TuneIn app, and I'm sure somewhere else, but those are the main ones that come to mind right now. This is Trumpet Radio Live, the Tuesday edition. Dwight Falk and Abraham Blondeau with you here today on this second day of August. We're about, just a few days out from the Olympics, starting here towards the end of this week and then getting going next week. We have an interesting little headline later here in the headline section about that. One of the athletes is not too impressed with the lodging, so we'll read his comments there in a bit. And that'll be interesting to see how that whole situation goes over there in Rio. I saw a story last night on the news where they were talking about the water, which we covered yesterday, and how it is polluted in some ways. And then they were talking about how much firepower they've brought in, anti-terrorism. And they had a shot from up above the famous statue there overlooking Rio, and a military plane flying over that. It was kind of a surreal looking shot because they shot it from another plane that was above that military fighter flying over that kind of iconic statue. So they brought out the firepower. I mean, there is a threat of, I suppose there always is in an international event like this, but with everything that's been going on, they're really having a show of force.
Right, yeah, it is interesting because I think, well, the last Olympics, I think where there was a terrorist attack was 1972, I think. I could be wrong on that, but at least that's the tragic one there in Munich. But when people go to the Olympics, there are those threats, but usually they're kind of suppressed or they're in the background, and most of the media attention is on other things. But this year, it's seems like all the attention's on the possible disasters and all the problems. And like you said, there is a big threat having in a country where they are facing a lot of internal problems with security and other even political issues with who's even going to run the country when the Olympics start.
Yeah.
So it is interesting. And I mean, it's good to have a show of force, but I'm sure that will put some of the visitors off or chase some of them away from even coming.
Well, and even with some of the more recent terror attacks, especially the one in Nice, they were already under a state of emergency. I mean, they already had their military, I guess, and their police really paying attention, and they still had a problem. So hopefully nothing occurs, but it is interesting to see them beefing up for the Olympics. Washington Post, they always send out their top headlines of the day. And it was interesting because today's the email they sent out, the top five stories are all anti-Trump. Seems a little biased. I'm not saying they've got to love the guy, but it should be kind of equal back and forth. And even with Hillary, I mean, you mean to tell me there's nothing you could write about that you might want to consider? I mean, if they're going to be negative, at least be even, you would think. Top five stories, anti-Trump.
Yeah, this is really interesting because Trump has dominated the headlines in the Republican running for the nominee. And even now, and even though it's negative, his name is still in the headlines. But it is interesting how it's being reported because, like you said, there's a long list of things Hillary should be chastised on, things that she should be vetted on. And, I mean, there's still inquiries. She got away from the FBI conclusions, all these things. She hasn't held a press conference in over 300 days, so the press haven't even been able to talk to her. So all these things, but everyone's focusing on Trump, his comments. The big one is how he, him and the Khan family, mm-hmm. the Muslim soldier who died, and they talked at the DNC, and they've been having back and forth. So it's interesting to see how much they're really piling it on him in the major outlets. But even then, he's still doing quite well in the polls. I saw a CBS poll where Hillary got a bump, quote-unquote, after the DNC. But the other polls show the exact opposite.
She's, according to what I saw, she only led one day in August.
Right.
And really, when you have your convention, that's when you should be really taken off. Hillary Clinton didn't show up in the Washington Post send out until the seventh story down. And even that one was an anti-Trump story. It just happened to have her in the title. So it'll be interesting. Maybe, you know, it does appear to show a pretty clear bias. And I'll just be interested to see if they overestimate their clout, the Washington Post and other media outlets. You know, they're trying to create a kind of a landslide against Donald Trump. Are people going to listen to that or not? We talked about it yesterday. There really are two medias that are battling, the mainstream media and then the land of the tweet and the land of the Facebook. Now, those are still controlled by certain individuals, and people get shut off of there all the time. But it is a little more open. I mean, you can – people do send stuff, send out messages either from themselves personally or from a spokesman or something like that, and it goes to all the followers. So it'll be interesting to see how the media affects the campaign. And again, it's not – it's we're not highlighting this because we – you know, have a favorite candidate or something. But when you see one candidate getting all the negative publicity and the other one just they're not even talking about, when there are a lot of things that should be looked at, it just seems pretty one-sided. Donald Trump has noticed it, and he's come out and said a couple of things. He said we have to – his campaign has to punch through the media because they're going to create their narrative. And then he also said he thinks the election is going to be rigged. Well, that's pretty inflammatory because anytime a candidate comes out and says something like that, if they lose, there's a lot of people that are going to believe that. So some dangerous words, I think, being thrown around. But I don't know. Is it true? I don't know. I would have no idea. But when you see all of these stories going one direction, it seems like the people that are controlling the media have a favorite.
Right. Yeah, I think that's pretty obvious. And this has been a trend for a while, I think, media favoriting the Democratic nominee over the Republicans most of the time. But especially this year, it's different. And I just know because of social media and then even the normal news headlines, it's always filled with articles picking apart Donald Trump's statements. And it's hard to read them and take them credibly because they accuse him of being a Russian spy. He's the next Mussolini. He's a fascist populist. He wants to destroy the Constitution. They jumped all these conclusions. I mean, I'm not judging their veracity. I'm sure maybe there's probably some truth to everything they write. But when you jump to those conclusions and you're always just pointing out the flaws or the mistakes, but you don't look at the other side where they're almost saying the exact same thing, or looking at the current administration where they've done the same thing, that's where it's frustrating because there is no proper objective view of politics where people can make informed decisions and responsibly vote. And people can see through that, I think. They can see that. And it's even if their message has a grain of truth in it, it will be rejected because they're not really giving both sides the credence they give, and even just taking it into consideration some very serious matters with the other candidate. It is national security, and it affects a lot of families who have had loved ones died and everything. So it's just interesting. I haven't seen too many political elections, but haven't seen one just heated and just the charge of rhetoric on both sides, both from the Republican and Democratic side.
It's very interesting to see how it all plays out. This is a really interesting headline, kind of unbelievable in a way. This is from Reuters. U.S. slavery reparations sought in first Black Lives Matter agenda. So the Black Lives Matter group, they have an agenda now. They put it forward and they said, here's what we want. Here's what we're demanding. A coalition affiliated with the anti-racism Black Lives Matter movement, which, again, that's their writing. I don't think there's anything anti-racism about it. I think it's pro-racism. They're just being racist against everybody else. But that's what they write. The anti-racism movement, Black Lives Matter, called for criminal justice reforms and reparations for slavery in the United States, among other demands in its first policy platform released on Monday. We seek radical transformation, not reactionary reform. Michaela Brown, a spokeswoman for Baltimore Bloc, one of the organizations that worked on the platform, said in a statement. Now, so they've got all of these demands. And it's interesting, too, because even in this article, they talk about how this movement began with the, you know, the killing of this unarmed Michael Brown. But they don't, again, they don't get into the details. He attacked an officer. You know, he had two arms. They were wrapped around the guy.
Right.
So that's not an accurate statement either. But here's some of what they want, besides they want to be paid, I guess. The agenda calls for an end to the death penalty, decriminalization of drug-related offenses and prostitution, and then they seek a demilitarization of police departments. It seeks reparations for lasting harms caused to African Americans of slavery and investment in education and jobs. Well, look, what they're saying here is they want to be able to just have drugs, have prostitution, not have the police get in their way, and pay us money. Does that sound like a good idea to anybody?
Well, yeah, that's exactly what they're demanding. And, it, you know, when everyone talk, I mean, slavery was a terrible thing. And, in fact, I have an article on the Trump.com that discusses that a little bit on how it affected America and why it's a bad thing. And it was and still is. But at the same time, if someone is really that dead set against slavery and they maybe want to see reparations or they want to see some kind of payback, put it that way, I think the almost the 600,000, the 800,000 dead men, Americans, from that war is reparations enough if that's what they want to see.
From Civil War.
Yeah. That fought to give them freedom. And then there's a lot of other developments that took place after that to finally have them in a practical manner. But this is just a, it's just frustrating to see someone or an organization just hijack the American justice system where they can, under the visage of like civil rights, they want to just upend the rule of law and just make a mockery of everything America stands for. And that's exactly what this is. And it's just frustrating because there's a lot of other legitimate needs and concerns that have to be looked at in this country. But the one that is causing a lot of, inciting a lot of violence, its entire foundation is based off of events that were all the officers were acquitted of any wrongdoing anyway. It's just frustrating to see this have so much, have such a big voice, have so much limelight right now.
The bitter, bitter irony is that on one hand, they say we want money because you should pay us back for slavery. But on the other hand, they're seeking freedom to put themselves back into a slavery. Is somebody that's hooked on drugs, are they free or are they a slave? Is a young girl that's caught up in prostitution, is she free or is she a slave? Clearly, they're enslaved. You can be enslaved to all kinds of things. And what kind of a community would that be? What kind of a town would that be? And they, in another place in the article, they said they want to, you know, stop the violence against the black men and the black people. That's a really good idea. But most of the violence comes from within that community against each other. There was nothing in here that I saw about that. It's everybody else's fault. It's the police's fault. I mean, there are neighborhoods like that. Drug abuse, prostitution, police don't go in there. Is that the country that people want to live in? Is that the town people want to live in or bring their kids up in? I mean, are they crazy? This is, it's just insanity.
Yeah, I mean, basically, they want to legalize some of the very elements that cause the problems. And that, I mean, that doesn't solve anything. that's, I think, common sense, but if you look at history and just the way human nature works, that it just leads to further destruction of character and of society. And like you said, it is ridiculous that these claims can be made and that people take them seriously. And that, I mean, they have more of a voice than some people who might criticize President Obama or Hillary Clinton or any, like, some politicians have made some fatal errors in national security. These groups like this are getting more airtime and more legitimacy than them. And it's frustrating. And at the same time, I mean, this is how democracies die, is when we we endorse ideas like this, when it's very clear that that's it's not part of the solution, and it's just trying to legitimize the very things that cause the problems in the first place. And it just creates such a destructive cycle, like you said, where it enslaves people to sin, to violence, and this, we're in that cycle right now where you see generations of people not able to get out of it.
Yeah. And it's so ironic as well that on the same stage, like, say, at the DNC or somewhere, you can have people that are supporting, or in the hall at least, I don't know if they all got up on stage, you have people that are supporting this movement, Black Lives Matter, and you have people supporting women's rights. How do those two work? Because Black Lives Matter is saying, look, you should decriminalize prostitution. Isn't that one of the greatest scourges on women and men as well, but on women, especially in a lot of third world nations? I mean, you see story after story after story about the terrible conditions in some third world places where the children are sold into that life. And so you have people that are side by side, both cheering and chanting, and one wants to legalize prostitution, the other one's yelling about women's rights. It baffles the mind. How do those two things equate? It just doesn't. What do you say about it?
Yeah, just high level hypocrisy. That and we've seen this in a lot of things. Just how, like, for example, President Obama can make a deal with Iran and Cuba, even though they violate human rights all the time, but yet he can't even make a deal with Republicans in his own country. And it probably has stronger language against Republicans than those nations that, I mean, Iran, they hang people, they stone them to death. They do a lot of other things, just like ISIS and other entities do. And so you see this a lot on both sides, but especially in the radical left, where you have a lot of elements in there that want to destroy what America is. And they might be able to camouflage what their true intentions are through certain ways, but you can just, if you just read it for yourself, you can see that it's that's what it is, and it's really undermining the foundation of America, and people are letting it happen. That's the funny thing about democracy, is that they've never been conquered from the outside. They have, but it always proceeds by people letting it decay from the inside, and that's what we're seeing right now.
Yeah, it's really, really shocking. And now they have other demands too. Some of them would be more probably legitimate, but those are some of the ones they highlight in this article. And you know, too many minorities in prison, they say, so let's just not make it illegal to do these things. So now the criminals can be on the street, and you can take that prison culture and just leave it on the street and let it spread. Unbelievable. So anyway, we'll see. I don't know how much traction they'll get. They're pretty radical. I mean, even within, say, the left, I think they're pretty radical, and not everybody's on board with what they're saying, but they do get plenty of attention. We talked the other day about some of those big fires going on out there in California. They were over by Big Sur, and continuing to some extent, but this is on the other side of the country now, and the opposite side of the spectrum. Flooding in Maryland. Historic Maryland town faces a long recovery after flooding. The picturesque Main Street of Ellicott City, Maryland, faces a months-long recovery that could cost hundreds of millions of dollars, which, by the way, I don't think is sitting around.
Right.
You see all these hundreds of millions, and like, where are they? After devastating flooding left two dead and damaged nearly every home and business along the road. It's amazing. The two died when the town about 14 miles west of Baltimore took on 6.5 inches of water Saturday night, most of it between 7 and 9 p.m. So 2 hours, and you got 6.5 inches of water, swept away hundreds of cars, tore away sidewalks, wrecked storefronts and building foundations. there's nowhere for that water to go. We get that much rain. We've had rain like that occasionally here in Oklahoma, and no matter where you get that, it's going to be a pretty catastrophic flood.
Yeah, floods are, I guess, a different kind of natural disaster because they can cause a lot of damage, even when they're not deadly necessarily, just because the water damage on the buildings and it covers such a big area. I think just a year or two ago, our road was swept out near here, near the studio, from all the rain. Just the road vanished for a section of it. So it can cause a lot of infrastructure damage. And it is sad when you see like historic monuments or little historic towns, especially in the old New England area, when they get damaged because there's the history's lost in a way. But yeah, just floods are, it's nice to have the rain, but it's bad to have too much rain, but I'm sure if they can get a pipeline to send it to California, they would.
Yeah, it's, you need enough, but not too much. We do see a lot of erosion of the infrastructure here in the U.S. Some of it's natural disasters, some of it's just time and wear and not repairing. And then some of it is man-made. There's a high-rise in San Francisco, a pretty fancy one that's had a lot of famous people live there over the years. It's sinking and tilting. Make you nervous? They say a newly built high-rise residential tower in San Francisco that's home to famed 49ers quarterback Joe Montana and Giants outfielder Hunter Pence is slowly sinking and shifting and may ignite a court battle between residents and the city. It's 58 stories tall. It's called the Millennium Tower. It's located at 301 Mission Street, just south of the city's financial district. It was completed in 2008 and has sunk 16 inches and shifted 2 inches to the northwest since opening, according to a report issued by an independent consultant. The owners of the $350 million building told the TV station KTVU the construction next door of the Transbay Transit Center, a $4.5 billion project to serve as a hub of mass transit, has caused the ground movements. So they're working underground, and it's making this giant building shift, so they're nervous about what's going to happen to it.
Right. Yeah, this happens quite often, actually. I remember watching a documentary on New York City because a lot of the buildings are built on land, built up on garbage. So they're scared of if something happened to the ground, there's a lot of ground movement, that the buildings can start shifting around. And yeah, I mean, it's probably just an oversight probably by the engineers. Some things you can't foresee when they built the building. I'm sure they didn't think something would be built like that beside it. But still, it's for the residents to be a little scary to know your building's sinking and it's shifting more and more, and it could lean over. So yeah, just something you don't think about all the time, but yeah, it would be a little nerve-wracking.
In some of those big cities, like especially like in New York, there's kind of multiple layers to the city, and there's old abandoned things underground, and there are some people that's kind of their hobby. They go and they find those places and they take pictures or video and they put them up on the internet. It's kind of fascinating. It's pretty dangerous, and there's a lot of history there in some of those cities for the U.S. I mean, it's not like Europe, but we do have a couple hundred years there, and so they build something and then they abandon it and build something on top of it. And it is funny how that works out. Like even in Edmond here, you know, there was this gas station just down the road and they tore it down and built a brand new CVS.
Right.
And there's another CVS like two blocks down the road. Yeah. Like why did we need a CVS here? I'm not against CVS, but you know, it's like a couple of years ago when they did that with Starbucks. Like there was a Starbucks and then there was like a Starbucks inside the Starbucks. They just keep building Starbucks. You're like, how many do we need?
Starbucks inception. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I saw that too. Or even Dollar General. There's like a two miles away from each other, or it might be 3 miles. But I don't know. Maybe it makes sense business-wise to do that, but it does seem a little odd. But it's talking about the infrastructure. It reminds me of something I read about Boston when they did the big dig and put that underground tunnel for traffic there. One of the city planners, he said there's so much wiring and piping underneath Boston now that there's basically no dirt under in the city, under the roads and everything. In the downtown district, there's no dirt because it's all pipes and everything else take up all the space.
Wow.
Just because it's so compacted and the way they had to move things around for that. So yeah, just interesting. I never would have thought of that, but you have to fit a lot of stuff underground in cities nowadays.
Yeah, they're always looking for new places to build. Those are some of the headlines from today. The Key of David program is coming up here in a bit on KPCG. Make sure you listen for that. Also, the Trumpet Daily radio show with your host, Stephen Fleury. From Edstone, England, today he talked about how Ronald Reagan was a president who saw the world in black and white and dealt with issues by defining good and evil, something we don't hear a lot about today. It was this moral clarity that allowed him to take a strong stance against the USSR. In 1983 and at other moments of Soviet aggression, Reagan condemned the shooting down of a Korean airliner that drifted into Russian airspace. The strength of his comments would never be seen in a Western leader today. And, of course, there is a real difference when you look at, you can look at many examples. Red Line in Syria comes to mind. That's probably one of the bigger ones, where the president was fairly strong in his comments about what he wouldn't allow, and then he allowed it, and then came out later and said that was one of the greatest accomplishments of his administration. Still not wrapping my mind around that one. Real difference between the leadership we saw there in the 80s and what we see today.
Yeah, if there's a lot of great sound clips on the show there with Stephen Fleury from that address he made to the nation in 1983 after the shooting down of that Korean airliner, but also other comments he made. And I think everyone remembers a lot of his famous speeches, even the one at the Berlin, at the Brandenburg Gate. I mean, what leader would tell Putin to tear down this wall today or tear down everything else he's built up in these nations? He's a strength, and what backed him up was the righteousness of the cause in a way of saying it. Because everyone knew he was right to stand up against the Soviet Union. They knew it was a regime based off of expansionism and taking advantage of other nations. So it was clear he was right, and people would back him up. Nowadays, there's so much moral ambiguity, and how can you back up a leader that says one thing and then doesn't do it, allows hundreds of thousands of people to die in Syria, and it says, oh, it's the greatest accomplishment of his career. I mean, more than half a million people have died in Syria, and the law of it is to blame because of U.S. inaction and letting other nations take the lead. When half a million people die, I wouldn't think that's a great accomplishment.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. Make sure you listen for that Trumpet Daily Radio show today with Stephen Fleury. If you can't catch the one of the replays, make sure that you go to kpcg.fm. You can get the podcast there and listen to it when you get a chance to do it. Make sure you get that. And, of course, all of the programming here on KPCG can be found online at kpcg.fm as well. Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG.